Welcome to the Freedom Friends Show, where we introduce you to all of the different techniques that you can take in order to make more freedom friends. Those who either help you get clients, support you with your clients, or those who just simply help you achieve some level of freedom in your life or business. Okay, well, we are live. So thank you for agreeing to join me. So we have Shay Monique of Chocolate City, the Chocolate City Burlesque and Cabaret. Is it group? See, I should have got this together. Chocolate City Burlesque and Cabaret is troupe. Okay, see, that's not on here. So Shay Monique is the co-founder and producer. She's an entrepreneur, burlesque performer. I met you at I would call it a ladies' night out, where you taught me how to, what was the phrase? Take up space. Which I fell in love with that phrase. And I think I at least said it at least 10 times between that day and the next. And then you invited me to your show, which I was like super duper stoked about, because I've never seen a black woman jump out of a cake naked. So, so I'm like, yeah, it's hilarious. I'm glad that we were already Facebook friends. And I think I don't even know how we initially friended one another, but I know that I was looking at burlesque.
I posted something maybe on like the Dream Catchers page.
Oh,
you know, like you posted something that like resonated with me on a level where it was like, I want to follow this person and I want to kind of like stay on track and not just like, I'm not very active in that group, you know, I'm fairly active, but like there was something you posted, and I could not tell you what, but it was like, stay connected in some way, even if loosely, with this person. So I like sent you a friend request and was like, hey, I don't know you, but whatever you posted just resonated with me, and I kind of want to stay at least vaguely in touch in the way that people do on the internet.
I love it.
That was a while ago.
Yeah, it was. I don't even know. It had to have been earlier this year, maybe. I'm thinking.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Last year. It was a while ago, because I think...
Oh, you're right.
Sure, I've recently kind of broken up my Facebook into a more... like, this is just my friends and family, and this one's more public, and I'm not even sure, I may have even friended you, but it was just kind of all the same space.
I love it.
Now I'm a little more... Well, like what's going where?
Well, I don't have the exact date, but according to Facebook, we have been friends since August of 2015. So it's been exactly 1 year that you've been my Facebook friend.
Okay.
It's been exactly 1 year, and we've had a chance to meet in person. So I think that's pretty awesome. So welcome to the Freedom Friends Show, Shay. I appreciate you coming.
Thank you. I'm very, very flattered and honored to be here.
Yeah. So one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on the show, you know, aside from you being awesome, amazing, and outstanding, right, is as women, we frequently are, so the piece of your presentation, your talk, it wasn't really a talk, you taught a class. And the piece, like I said, that stuck with me the most was this idea of taking up space, right? And one of the things that you mentioned that I loved is that usually women are taught to be very, you know, quiet and demure and this closed thing. And you, I mean, just with your presence and your politics, which I hope that I would love to talk about, but with all of that, you kind of are revolutionizing what it means to be a woman. How did you come to be this, where you are now, or who you are now, today?
So, we had a brief conversation earlier before we got started about intentional parenting, and I think my mother did parent me intentionally, and I think that I just was very, 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 very lucky, and that I always had amazing older women in my life. And you'll hear women say time and time again, you know, I used to worry about such and such, so-and-so, so-and-so, and then I turned 25 and I didn't care about that. When I turned 30, I stopped caring about that. Girls, you better wait till you turn 40. Your life is going to be completely different because you don't worry about this, and now you know you're blah, 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 blah. And because I've always been around people who are older than me, I think it just kind of gave me like a little extra push.
Gotcha.
My mother, growing up, I think she got all that programming, like, go to school, be good, respect your elders, be quiet, you know, go be a teacher or a nurse or a social worker. Not there's anything wrong with those professions, but there's also an attitude that people raise girls with. And so she very much drilled into me from a very young age to be assertive.
Oh.
And I, at times, was quite a challenge for my teachers, but, like, I mean, be assertive, be assertive, be assertive was something. And I'm very aware when I think about myself, I think my first peak in life was around the age of 9. And I never did read the book on the Ophelia Complex, but I feel like it did hit me because I do feel like I kind of started getting a little quieter and a little less sure of myself for those teen years. And I know it's a normal thing. But one of the really cool things that was good for me is also that my mother did. She's secretly vain. Like, you wouldn't necessarily know that she was vain, but if you go in her house and you count the number of mirrors, she goes, "Hey, this person really must like looking at this stuff." You don't notice it. You don't feel like you're in a hall of mirrors or anything like that. But, like, if you should ever go, how many mirrors are in this one house? And so one thing that was very powerful for me, because I was always self-conscious, I've always been a bigger girl, a bigger kid, so I've always been self-conscious about being a fat girl and, like, all the different things that go along with that. And one of the things I think that strikes people the most when they see me is that I'm a big girl. I weigh a little over 300 pounds, and I don't physically carry any shame about that. And I think people expect certain things of fat women. And just seeing me existing, whether it's like I'm just at lunch and I decided to wear a mini dress and heels or whatever, because it's just so against what people typically expect, that can be very liberating just to witness me. And my process of kind of being comfortable in my own skin, honestly, I feel like it was a process of desensitization. Like, there was a phase in high school where I would just stare at myself in the mirror every day. And this is an extreme example, but in the same way that if somebody were blowing bombs up across the street from your house every day, you wouldn't necessarily jump every time you heard one after about a year.
Mm.
The same way you can look at yourself and, A, you know, not go, oh my gosh, but also start to appreciate certain things about yourself. I also have found that that is very utilitarian, you know, like, it means, quote unquote, look good to certain people's standards, but it surely feels good. I used to babysit a lot, and like little kids love being around fat people because we're cuddly. And they have like the sweetest, littlest people in the world like affirm your body in a certain way. It's kind of powerful, you know? So, I started belly dancing at a young age, and that was part of putting me around older women who were just a little farther on the evolutionary path, self-evolutionary path, in terms of all that. That's what I just think I got like a head start on.
Gotcha. That's awesome.
Question.
That's awesome. I love that. So follow-up question. You said that you offer something different than what people expect. You said from a fat woman. Do you think it's what society expects, or is it what we've grown used to in terms of like confidence levels or body?
Both. And I think they all inform each other, right? Like, you, in March, when it rained every day, you just woke up expecting it to rain. Does it usually rain every day in March? No, but like, once it's what you see, that informs your expectations. So I think they feed into each other.
Wow.
But you're right, like, and I say I'm a fat woman, but truthfully, like, society has kind of, it does a really interesting way of trying to beat us all down,
yeah,
just enough to make us want. I really think it's a function of capitalism, to be perfectly honest with you. It's like, if I can just convince, then I, but if society, the world, capitalism, whoever we want to blame it on, can convince us that we're not quite enough, we're always going to be chasing something. And so much of particularly American culture and middle class American culture is based on just wanting a little bit more, a little bit better, and often there's a cost on that, whether it's chasing higher education, which has a lot of us battled in debt, you know, or convincing somebody that, you know, they should, like, remortgage their house so their kid can go to this school, even though, you know, maybe their kid could go to that school and they've got enough money to cover it or their scholarships to cover it. You know, I think there's cost quite enough. You're great. But if you would do blah, 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 you'd be awesome. I think it permeates every element of our culture, not just, like, kind of personal confidence and self-esteem, but it's everywhere. And so I think, you know, as a fat woman, a fat black woman with natural hair, I kind of have all these strikes against me in terms of versus what we see as the ideal. So I'm someone you kind of least expect to be, like, just confident and happy and just, like, here I am, like, this is me, this is my skin, like, this is who I be. I'm not apologizing for my existence. But I think in reality, most people, men and women of all races and everything, have a certain lack of confidence that just is a part of our culture. Like, you're just never quite enough is what I think America tells you. I mean, I've been taking watching the Olympics, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, I watched the Olympics as an American where it's like, we're about to crush this. Like, it's not even, is there a challenge, you know? No, it's like, our team's the best. And it's not even like, are we going to win? But it's like, how much are we going to win? And it's like, that's almost not even a game. But, like, if you're not lapping, you know, your opponent, suddenly you're not quite good enough, you know? So I think it's everywhere. Mm. But particularly if you get somebody who has all these extra strikes against them, and I'm just out here like, hey, here I am. Make me a lazy. I'm not here for you. I'm here for me. People
are
like, what?
I love it.
Oh, is that a thing?
Yeah, well, and I assume it really draws people to you because that is a very attractive state of being, you know, to be confident and happy. I mean, just those two things alone. We're not even talking about the rest of the things, you know, the rest of the labels that are things that we assign to ourselves. But just being happy and confident as a woman, my goodness.
Right.
So let me ask you this, because one of the things that you mentioned that I love when you said that your mom had mirrors around the house, I tell people all the time, I think part of my confidence, my father used to take pictures of me all the time. And I mean, I still have, I don't even know how many pictures I have, but from the day I was born, like, he always took pictures of me. So now as an adult, a 34-year-old woman, I just love getting pictures taken. So I, you know, it's Sunday. I should have a photo shoot. And I want to book someone this whole night. So I want to ask you, how do you, you know, growing up, well, I guess I probably might have answered the question for you, but I was going to say, how do you get around not feeling a certain way that society, you know, not having confidence that seems so, as you say, permeated throughout our culture? Like, how do you get around it?
If you aren't raised with it, you have to raise it into yourself. You know, we are responsible for raising ourselves, you know, like our parents, our mentors, our whomever, they, you know, they do it for a while and then it's on us, you know. And I know people are struggling with certain things. It's like, yeah, life gave you a raw deal in this certain circumstance, but now you're responsible for how you respond to that. And so you have to figure out, you have to tell yourself stuff and make yourself believe it. And I'm a firm believer in, you know, thoughts become words and words become actions. So whatever your version of an affirmation and the affirmation process is, like, do it. You know, look at yourself in the mirror and tell yourself you're awesome. You know, whatever your weakness is, and you can be real. Like, and you can, we're not all going to look like Barbie or whoever the, like, standard of the day is. So, you know, if you have self-consciousness around your appearance, like, I'm not going to say, look at yourself and tell yourself you look like, I don't know, Kylie Jenner. Because you probably don't. But you look like you, and you are beautiful, and you are powerful, and you are... I have this belief that sexy is literally our birthright due to evolution, right, and natural selection. Because, like, we've got generations of people who have mated with ideal people to get us to where we are. Like, I feel like natural selection has made us all sexy ass people, you know, mm-hmm. and you just need to constantly affirm yourself, and you have to say these things until you believe them. You try to be aware of your self-limiting and negative self-talk, and don't beat yourself up about beating yourself up, right? That just becomes another circle. But be aware of it and go, oh, how can I rephrase that? Or maybe I don't need to say that to myself. Or, wow, I didn't even realize how many times, you know, if I miss a turn, I tell myself I'm stupid. You're not stupid. You're distracted. Those are two entirely different concepts. Mm. And be aware of how you speak to other people. You know, are you doing that to your kids? You know, if your kid was doing something, did you tell them they're stupid? When really, you know, like, particularly, like, they're distracted. Two radically different concepts. I know you can do this. Why don't you focus? You might have accomplished that quicker, better, more efficiently. But you just have to be very intentional about how you treat yourself. Start being mindful of, like, who is in your world and what you're feeding yourself. Mm-hmm. I had a really interesting experience a few years ago. My brother left Facebook because it was too negative. You know, everybody's just on there either, you know, being, you know, showing fight videos, they're being negative, they're doing this, they're doing that. So I just don't want that content in my life, so I'm leaving it. And while I respected that, because in that context it was good for him to leave it, that was not my experience of Facebook. But that's because of who I have filled my life with. Mm-hmm. My life is full of creative types. My life is full of entrepreneurs. My life is full of people, you know, starting families. So anytime I go on Facebook, I'm inspired.
Yeah.
Because one of my friends is organizing a coaching session for women and has started this whole amazing, you know, business. Another of my friends has moved her whole entire family to the Middle East. And she and her husband are teaching, and her kids get to see the seven wonders of the world. Another one of my friends was really excited because they figured out how to make veal piccata for the first time. But, like, my timeline was always inspirational because those are the people that are around me.
Yeah.
And so while I don't think that when I was, you know, 19, I was, like, specifically saying these are the friends I want in my life, as an adult, I am very aware of, you know, what I'm putting into me and how that's going to lift me up or tear me down.
I love that.
To be confident and happy. Those are choices.
You know what's funny? I've said that to people before, you know, this idea that, you know, your parents, I mean, everything that you've said, I love it because I have said it before. I've said, you know, your parents were only responsible for the first 18 years. Now, what have you done with the time since then? And we frequently don't even think about it. Like, we just disregard and hold on to this idea. Well, my parents, yo, that was 20 years ago.
Right. And I mean, I do it too. And sometimes it's a joke. I, you know, was telling you that I went to the American Girl Golf Tour, and I still, American Girl Golf, interesting, if you know anything about them, when you start talking to people, because if you talk to people about their experiences with the dolls, you can learn a lot about socioeconomic stuff just as it plays out through this doll. Mm. And so my parents could afford to buy me a doll, but it was a big deal because this doll was like $100, maybe $150, I don't know. And so I was able to get one as a child, but I was not allowed to play with it. It was like, this is an expensive doll, it's a collector's item, you can have it, but don't touch it. We respect and value this thing. I have a sister who's 14 years younger than me. Not only did she get a doll, now the dolls changed over time, so when I was growing up, they only had dolls that related to history. And interestingly, because they only had dolls that related to history, and I was a little black girl, the doll I got, you know, her background story is that her family was enslaved and then they ran away to freedom. Because these dolls, the history dolls, come with stories.
Mm.
My little sister, by the time she came up, A, everything changed. Now they're making dolls that look like you, and you get to customize them, pick their eye color, their skin color, their hair color, do they have freckles, do they not, do they have glasses, and all this stuff. My sister got a doll that was like her, so it wasn't an educational toy. She was allowed to play with it, and she was allowed to play with my doll.
She was allowed to do what?
My doll. And I'm like, and Ben said, oh, she can't play with it yet. She doesn't know how to take care of it. And I'm like, well, she's two. Now, at 9, you didn't trust me, but as my mom has more money over, you know, the decades, because it's been decades. Gosh, this doll is a little bit different. There's a very awareness that, of course, the two-year-old will get her own doll. She'll be allowed to play with it. If she destroys it, we can afford to send it to the doll hospital, which was not things that they could afford to do for me. I have another friend who, you know, had the Brooks but wasn't allowed to have the doll, you know, growing up in the same era, and a friend who had the doll. Her mother didn't want her saddled with, like, the heaviness or even just the lack of fun of a doll whose story is slavery, because, like, the costumes, the outfits, they're not that fun, right? So she got her the clothes for Victoria so she could play with them so that she had that experience. And it's really, I don't know, just to me, fascinating, like, the socioeconomic impact of these dolls. But whenever the doll comes up, I'm always like, I wasn't allowed to play with it, and I'm still jealous because my sister was allowed to play with it. And so, like, I mean, yeah, I harbor that full resentment, but, I mean, in reality, whatever. I have to bring it up, you know, but she was allowed to play with it, and I was, it's not fair.
Got
it. Life, and it's also a change in circumstances, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I love that you... I love that you say you feel away, but so what? Like, it's okay. Like, it's like literally it's okay. Giving yourself permission. Like, it's okay. Yeah. I love that about you.
I'm a little childish, but I'm still sad about this thing that happened when I was nine. But, yeah. I'm
such,
fine.
Yeah, such is life. Happy. I mean, it's okay. Like, that's the... I think that's the biggest thing. Go ahead.
Oh, I just said, it's fine. I'm a functioning adult. I'm confident. I light up the room when I walk through. I can buy my own new doll if I want.
I love it.
I'm not.
I love it. So here's the thing. So this is primarily, I love that you talk about confidence and the fact that you have a burlesque troupe. Like, I just love that. Can you talk a little bit about the business side of that, because it seems like, I mean, based on the fact that you continue to have shows, and you're an artist, you know, with all this creativity, I would love to hear how you have managed to bring both of those worlds together.
Business and burlesque?
Yes. So, like, one of the, I guess, one of the best business lessons or business advice that you would give for someone who's looking to do something similar.
My best business advice is don't do what's already happening. So for our troupe, we founded a primarily Black burlesque troupe because we just felt like the local burlesque scene wasn't familiar, or not familiar, friendly to Black performing in ways that, like, were still, unless you're experiencing them repeatedly, and then they felt not as subtle. And actually, my personal background is that I did burlesque exclusively as a hobby or just like a fun thing to do from time to time. I like being on stage. I don't like wearing clothes, but those two things go very well together. It was a fun thing to do until I started this troupe, and I started this troupe along with my co-founder, Tiki Dandridge, due to just complaints we're hearing from friends who perform, like, professionally, which is like a whole different ballgame. But one of the things I found with the local burlesque scene is that actually, like, the scene as a whole doesn't do a great job marketing. Actually, like, the same, let's say, 300 people come to all the shows. And when I say all the shows, I mean there's generally a burlesque show. There's at least three shows in a given weekend, and maybe more than that. A lot of times on a Friday, Saturday night, there's three shows in three different venues across town. And when I say the same 300 people come to all the shows, I don't mean all the shows are packed with 300 people. I mean, you know, sometimes you go and there's 10 people, sometimes all 300 are there, but it's like, I felt like the scene was marketing to itself. It's like, well, that just doesn't work. For me, the number one thing we try to do is to outreach, not with some people who are aware that the rest exists, but don't even know that it's in DC, like, at all. Not like they've never heard of My Troop, or they've never heard of, you know, any other particular troupe or performer, but they don't even know that there's burlesque in DC. And it's like, well, how can this thing happening at so many different venues? All haven't heard of it. So for me, it was very important to, like, let's not just keep marketing to the community, let's expand. And so that was the biggest, well, one of the biggest things for us. And because a lot of just Chocolate City's values are so community centric and broader, like DC-wide community centric, it was natural. You know, it's like, oh, you know, let's go to this open mic and let's, you know, network with these people. But even though there's plenty of burlesque performers, producers, and not troops so much, but performers and producers in DC, on some level, they're like, oh, we don't need another one of those. And it's like, well, sure, if we target a completely different audience. So that was a big thing for us.
Gotcha. How long has the troupe been in existence?
It's so funny. Thanks to the magic of Facebook and its flashbacks. About 2 years ago, we did our first call for auditions. So the troupe, Chocolate City Burlesque and Cabaret, initially we started with our very first Black Friday show on Black Friday, so November of 2014. And we kind of went in just committing to this one show, but knowing it, but laying the groundwork to do more, but like, let's just try this, let's see how it feels. And so then in February of last year, we were like, okay, let's officially be a troupe and see if everybody's interested in that. So we're like a year and a half, 2 years.
I love it. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're so welcome. So I don't want to take up your whole Saturday because I know you're probably busy. Just a couple more questions. So now, what's next for you? So where can we find you next?
Where can you find me next? We're gearing up for Black Friday already. So our next big thing would be our third annual Black Friday show, which will be at the Gower Hispanic Theater in Columbia Heights. Right on 14th Street, across the street from the only Target in D.C. And we're getting ready for that. That's kind of the big thing right now. We're kind of trying to figure out what our special guest and surprise lineup will be. But that's the next biggie.
Awesome.
So we'll be kind of grinding from now until then to get that ready.
Awesome. And so in terms of so where can we find you on social media?
Social media, so Chocolate City Burlesque is kind of everywhere at Chocolate City Burlesque. So on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and our website is chocolatecityburlesque.com. And if you need to email us, it's just chocolatecityburlesque@gmail.com. And then I personally am most places as the Shamily. And I'm also on shamonique.com. So that website needs some updating, but it exists.
Awesome. I love it. It's all good. And I just found out something new. I didn't know you had shea butter. I love that. I'm going to have to get me some.
I have shea butter. I'm a busy girl.
I love it. So that's, and for everyone listening, that's Shea, C-H-E. So definitely check out Shea. I love it. Oh, one final question.
Yes,
I asked.
Awesome.
Yes. Okay. One final question. What's your favorite song?
Push It by Salt and Pepper.
Yes. I love it. Why is that the favorite?
I don't know. It just came into my head. Actually, when you said it, Sexy Motherfucker by Prince came into my head, but that's not like my favorite song. That's like me and my mom's song.
Gotcha.
Right? I'm like, if I ever have a wedding, like my mom and I are going to do a mother daughter dance, the Prince's Sexy Motherfucker, and everybody around will be like, what is going on? But I don't know. Push It was the next thing that came to my head. It is definitely one of my favorite songs, and I've loved it since I was a little child, and just to walk around is not much more than a toddler, like literally kind of pushing the hair and you kind of a cane one. And it still gets me really excited. I don't know, it's hard to pick like an absolute favorite song. So it's like, that's like something that's specific to me that popped into my head. It was like Sexy MF, or like that's me and my mom.
I love it.
What else could be a favorite song? I don't know. I like songs.
It's all good. We're going to go with
Green Eyes by Erykah Badu.
Which one?
That I also love.
Which one?
Erykah Badu's Green Eyes.
Oh, yeah, that is a good one. I like that one.
Yes.
Oh, that's a whole, that's an awesome burlesque song.
every feeling and emotion you ever have.
Yes, that song definitely, it makes you think of a juke joint. My eyes are green.
Yeah.
Because I eat a lot of vegetables. I like that. Now I have to go play that. Thank you.
Well,
thank you, Shay. Yes, I certainly appreciate you coming onto the Freedom Friends Show. It has been a blast. I'm definitely have to, I hope you have another class again. I know I had so much fun. And you said, did you say that was your first time teaching a class?
Not my first time, but one of my first times. I don't teach often, like particularly with the troop. You know, you heard me say it in the show, and I mean it. Like, everybody in the troop is better than me, and I don't say this as an insult to myself, it's just a compliment to how hard they work on their burlesque. Like, I do a lot better with the stuff, and you know, the troupe has people who have been teaching for years, like Gigi Holiday's in the troupe, she owns a burlesque studio, and so a lot of times I, you know, if people want classes, it's just my job to like match the classes with like who we have available. And one of the interesting things is, like, as producers, like, our job is to kind of help get money in everybody else's hands. So, you know, like, when gigs come up, usually, you know, our priority is to get them to everyone else. When I met you, my office specifically wanted me because she knows me. But usually it's like, oh, we always kind of go, oh, you know, here, Gigi, here, Ava, here. You know, like, the kind of point is to give it to everyone else. And so, yeah, I don't teach often. Particularly burlesque. I used to teach belly dance in all sorts of environments, including once I taught belly dance at a nursing home.
I love it.
Which was fun. No, they put me there during the same time they used to do seated aerobics, so no one would stand up. So I was basically teaching elderly people how to give chair dances. I mean, lap dances. Because they didn't stand up. And so it's like, if you're doing a hip circle and you're not standing up, you're just grinding into the chair. It's fine by me, but that's a completely different class.
Hilarious. I love it. Well, definitely thank you again. I certainly appreciate you coming on to the show. For everyone who's listening, please go check out Shay Monique at shaymonique.com or the Chocolate City Burlesque Troupe at chocolatecityburlesque.com. Those links should be just beneath this recording. So as always, freedom requires friends, so please go out there and make you some, especially if you can find one who dances or teaches burlesque. Thanks, Shay.
Thank you so much. This was awesome.
You're welcome.
This episode of the Freedom Friends Show is brought to you by the Coach Your Damn Self Challenge. If you're ready to take back your power and achieve all of your dreams and goals, then join the Coach Your Damn Self Challenge today. That's CoachYadamnSelf.com. CoachYadamnSelf.com.